When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Siege, we're two games into Leafs Bruins. You've just come back from Boston. There's a lot we want to get to through the series. Are you doing okay? How's the travel for you? I know it's early, but it's always good to do a little check-in on Siege.
I'm doing well. It was not a long night of sleep after game two on Monday, but it's still early in the playoffs. So much like how these games are full of energy and everyone's still got some pop, I've still got some pop, but let's check back in a few weeks' time. It'll be the same as the players. You'll just be run down from the grind of it.
I just don't want you to fall asleep on the show. Like, I know you haven't gotten that much sleep.
No, that's not going to happen, my man. I was an early flight, but I was far from the only media member on it, and even some... some of the players' parents were on the flight, so it was an NHL-heavy flight at 6:15 a.m. from Boston back to Toronto.
The grind doesn't stop for anyone. Anyway, let's get into this series. Let's get into one player in particular who many people, especially in Toronto, are wondering about. William Nylander. Why is he not in this series? Why is he not playing? What's the deal with his injury? What can you tell us about William Nylander right now?
Well, I mean, that's being hidden behind lock and key at this point in time. I think it would be something you'd describe as an upper body injury, is my understanding. And I think the reason this is so alarming, I mean, for one, you're talking about a player for a good part of the season that was probably the Leafs' best player. I think in the second half, he was certainly surpassed by Auston Matthews, but he was, you know, key to what they do. He's been a player that's elevated in the playoffs, too, when at times his teammates haven't. And then the third part is he played all 82 games this year, including a 2-minute and 25-second shift that went into the final game of the season, of the final game of the season last Wednesday in Tampa. And so it was pretty alarming for him to miss practice Friday, miss game one on Saturday, then he misses game two on Monday. You know, the good news is we've seen him skate now a couple times, which is clearly a sign that he's working his way back towards being, you know, in the series. You know, from what I've been told, there doesn't seem to be any concern from the Leafs end about him missing, you know, an extended run of time, but every game this time of year matters. And when you're talking about someone who can be a game breaker, you know, if he could get in for game three, I think it'd be a huge boost to the Leafs, even if he isn't, you know, quite at 100%. You see the way that second game in the series played out, it's just quick moments, right? It's small little breakthroughs, that make the difference. I mean, the margin, that game hung on a knife's edge, essentially. It could have gone either way. Auston Matthews and, you know, Max Domi hook up on the big play and the big goal that secures the victory. But, you know, I think getting Nylander back on the power play, just having in a position where, you know, he can help break the puck out and gain the zone, you know, things he does very well, it would be a big benefit to the Leafs. So, bit of a mysterious one. I don't suspect we'll know the exact circumstances of what happened here until Toronto's played its last game, and maybe there's a, you know, there's a fair bit of gamesmanship going on this series. I don't know if you've noticed, but between Jim Montgomery, who's outright just kind of being goofy about his lineup decisions in terms of how he's describing them or not describing them, Sheldon Keefe's been more direct. He's just not kind of going there. But, you know, a fair bit of game playing going on with the reporters when it comes to who's in and who's out in this series so far.
Love hearing that, because I just have FOMO, honestly, just sitting in my Calgary apartment watching all of my friends cover the playoffs. So yeah, I would love to be partaking in some gamesmanship right now, listening to whatever coaches have to say about the lineup decisions. Don't mind me.
I don't mind it. I gotta say, like, I've seen some commentary out there about it. You know, does the league in a world where gambling's so prevalent, do they have to, like, you know, I think it's kind of fun. I think it gives us something to talk about and focus on. And you know, add some juice. I mean, even the whole Nylander scenario, right? Like, there's a fair bit of mystery shrouded in this one, you know. And then I happened to go stake out the practice rink on Sunday, and I got to see him skate for the first time, at least that we know of. You know, I just think that it to me, it adds something. Maybe I've just been around the playoffs so much and I'm accustomed to it, but it really doesn't bother me that much. You know, in some ways, I think it may create, in a roundabout way, may create a distraction. You know, if they came out on the first day that Nylander was absent from practice, it was like, look, he's not going to play the first couple games of this series. You know, he's such and such happened. You know, he took a hit in the Tampa game and isn't feeling right. It kind of takes some of, you know, there's way less focus on it. But when it's all just like no update on Willie, no update on Willie, then any little update on Willie becomes interesting. So I'm all for it is really what I'm getting to. And even, you know, Jim Montgomery saying, do you guys play Wordle? The starting goalie has two vowels in his first and last name. I mean, pretty funny.
That's good.
You know, this is we're not curing cancer over here. So I just don't feel like a little misdirection or a little bit of gamesmanship or whatever you want to call it. I think it adds something to the playoff time myself.
I will go play Wordle after this. Thanks for the reminder. So we know the Leafs didn't have Nylander in game one. They probably could have used him. They don't have him in game two, but it felt as if they were hanging on, not just hanging on. They held in and they did their part, especially against a spectacular Linus Ullmark. But Austin Matthews, I can't get over that goal, that catch in midair and then scoring on that breakaway. That, I mean, you've covered the man as long as you have. Is that the nicest playoff goal he's ever scored? I mean, in terms of the circumstances, the move that he's done to beat Linus Ullmark, like that's right up there for me in terms of when you account for everything in that moment.
Yeah, the only one that's kind of similar, there's in game five in Boston in 2019, the Leafs won a 1-0 game and he scored the winning goal with something about 5 minutes left, like kind of similar circumstances, a very tight game. And that was a really big goal at the time. I mean, they end up losing the series. So maybe you don't look back on it the same way, but I actually think that there's a case that could maybe be Austin Matthews' most impactful NHL game ever. You know, when you look at the way he impacted it across the board, I mean, even Jim Montgomery said outright, like he's been the most dangerous man on the ice in the series. And obviously he's got some players like David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand and, you know, guys that could fall into that category on any given game, you know, pretty high props, you know, from the opposing coach, I'd say. And, you know, whether it was the face-off dot, generating shots, you know, throwing checks, you know, obviously two primary assists and then scores that goal. I mean, that's kind of a signature performance, I would say. And it was badly needed under the circumstances, right? You don't have Nylander. You don't maybe have Marner going at 5-on-5 and generating a ton of offense on that line with Tavares. Now, Tavares did score a big power play goal that tied the game. So, you know, it doesn't always... It's not like every line you can expect to dominate the other team the entire game. I think that's something when you see people discussing playoff performances, I think that there's sometimes needs to be a recognition the other team's trying to win too. And you know, you really are just trying to hang on and find those moments. And, you know, when I look at that game, actually, Julian, and I've covered all the Leafs playoff games all the way back to 2004, actually, that might be their, in some ways, their best win for me in the playoffs. Just because it was not a game where they relied on outscoring the other team. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't, you know, we all had fun watching the 7-6 Winnipeg Colorado game, but like that's not going to be a typical playoff game, right? I mean, obviously weird things happen, but a typical playoff game is the one like you saw in game two in Boston, I think, where, you know, the Leafs fell behind. They had some things go against them, but they kept pushing. They had, you know, a goal called back where Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, high sticks the puck. It's not that there's any controversy about that, but in the moment they thought they tied it. You had to deal with the disappointment of seeing that come back. You know, they might've had another goal, Cale Yarncroke, that was gloved really nicely by Linus Ullmark, but you know, may or may not have been in the net. Just not a definitive, you know, view of that. Point being is they had to battle through and find a way to win. And that's what they did. And when you measure it at the end of the night, they, you know, were ahead in shots. They had some territorial advantage. Held their own on specialty teams, killed a big penalty late in the game. I mean, those are the kind of things that maybe the Leafs haven't always done. I mean, I sort of wrote this in my post-game column for The Athletic, but to me, that's the sort of game the Leafs would have lost in years gone by. And so, you know, I think it's a good reminder that the past doesn't always tell us what's going to happen in the present or the future. But also the Leafs aren't a young team anymore, right? This is their eighth trip with this set of core forwards anyway, and plus Morgan Rielly to the playoffs in a row. You know, they've added guys like Domi and Bertuzzi who are playing on the top line, and you know, Domi's 29. Like they're players that I think have been around a little bit. you know, the blue line's finding a way to hang in. That's the other part of that goal too, is, you know, what Toronto's essentially done is they've sacrificed some of the puck movement on their blue line to have, I guess, a little more beef back there with adding guys like Lyubushkin and Joel Edmondson. And, you know, that gave them some problems in game one. They weren't breaking the puck out very well. It seems to me one of the adjustments that was made there is flipping into the neutral zone a little bit more, which we've seen teams do. I mean, all the way back, I remember the Penguins of 2016 when they kind of won with their was it no-name defense, or, you know, they won that season without Chris Letang being able to play, or 2017 rather. And they relied a lot on just, you know, flipping pucks out to relieve pressure and trying to win those dashes in the neutral zone. I mean, there's a little element of that there on the Domi, you know, goes deep Tom Brady style to Austin Matthews in Boston. So, you know, I think that the adjustments worked out well for the coaching staff, and, you know, you got a big performance from your big player. So, you know, there's a lot to like about that game for Toronto, but of course, man, still a long way to go. It's not a predictor of what happens. You know, game three is a fresh game. But I think the Leafs should be feeling a lot of confidence. And the last point I'll make, and I was saying this in real time, I was really impressed right from the moment the buzzer sounded on a 5-1 loss in game one, just how composed the team was. Like, going to the dressing room afterwards, nobody was like making excuses. Nobody was trying to sugarcoat it and be like, well, we deserve, but like, they were like, you know, we did this wrong. We did this wrong. Like, I felt like they were very methodical in describing their problems. They owned their performance. They owned their shit, for lack of a better term. And I think that sets you up for success, because it isn't always going to go your way in the playoffs. But, you know, the key is you can't get too rattled. The same way, like, when a call goes against you, or a bounce, or, you know, you think you tie a game on a power play and then it comes back with a high stick. I mean, you just have to keep playing. And you know, I see a different mindset among this group. And look, it's a different team. The same core players, but there's a lot of new faces there too that have been through these battles.
And now it's on the Leafs to find a way to get it done in game three at home. I can't help but think of some of the atmospheres we've seen in other Canadian markets in the playoffs. Edmonton, we've seen how crazy it's gotten there. Vancouver, they went wild in game one.
Vancouver was bumping.
We will get to Vancouver in a second. But yeah, that crowd, incredible. And also, of course, Winnipeg's crowd too. Toronto has a history of not having the most excitement inside their own building, especially for games that matter. If there's never been more important of a time for them to do that than for game three and beyond for the rest of this series, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And, you know, some that is well earned, that reputation. Like, I'm not going to push back against that, but I will say the playoff atmospheres are usually pretty good in there. I mean, there's nothing like the playoffs. I mean, I think even if you're of a more corporate type that's going to games, it's one thing to go to a game on a Tuesday in March and another, you know, especially when you get to get game four, it's a Saturday, 8 p.m. start in Toronto. So there's a lot of pre-gaming to be done. You know, I'll even say in Boston, quite frankly, game one, which was an 8 p.m. start on a Saturday, it was much more lively of a crowd, you know, and I'm not accounting for what happened in the game, but like even just in the early going, like you felt it more, you know, it's a little sleepier when you're a Monday crowd. I mean, the facts are the facts. A lot of people that game last night probably had to wake up and go to work today, whereas the ones that attended on Saturday, by and large, were probably having a chance to have a let loose a little bit and sleep in on Sunday, and there you go. So I don't know that the Leafs, you're right, will necessarily match what we've seen in the other Canadian marketplaces. It's just harder for the real fans to get in the building. No way around that. You know, the season ticket list for the Leafs, like, a lot of people have tickets in their family for like 70 years. Like, it's just, if you don't have one of those connections, or you don't have a lot of money to go to StubHub and drop it on a ticket, it's just hard to get in the building. You know, I went to 3 games ever in my life before I was a reporter in the NHL, and one of them was in Buffalo. So, you know, and I was a hockey mad kid. It just was not, you know, and I'm probably lucky. Like, I'm not sure all my friends even got the 3 games. So the point is, yeah, it's a tough thing. I have told you about the time I snuck into a playoff game, though, didn't I?
Yes. I want to say you did.
I won't repeat the story, but I once snuck into a Leafs playoff game prior to working in the media.
Wait. Who was it? What year was it? What was it? Who was the team against?
It was against Pittsburgh. I think that was the year 2000.
I'd have to go back into the archives to remember that story. I don't know why that story's not popping back in my head. Maybe you didn't tell this story. I know you got into an MLB All-Star game. You didn't really sneak in. But you got a ticket for that.
I got given a ticket to that. But
how did you sneak? You tell the story.
The story was I played on something called School Reach in high school. It's sort of like a trivia team kind of thing. Like it's sort of a Jeopardy style game. And my high school was actually, we were in the provincial tournament, which was being held at U of T in Toronto. And, you know, we stayed at the U of T dorms. And when I went up there, my dad, I wish I remember the exact money, but my dad's like, oh, the Leafs play. Like, here's some money, you know, go try to get a scalper's ticket. And I don't know if he gave me $60 or $100, whatever it was. Needless to say, when I got to the scalpers, I was light. I did not have whatever the cost of the ticket was. I did not have the ticket. And so I'm just hanging around in what is now Maple Leaf Square. It looked a lot different back in those days. And I watched the first period out front because they had it on the screen. And then at the intermission at that time, people could go outside for cigarette breaks. And there was a door open to the rink and I just ran for it. I don't know why. I was certainly not a troublemaking kid. But like I almost felt like I had to get in. And then I watched the last two periods from the seats. So
which seat? Like, were you sitting in someone's seat? Were you
lower
standing?
Bowl. Oh. I know I went into the lower bowl. I must have just like found an open seat and yeah. I do not advise this. And quite honestly, like the way the arena's set up now, like all like I could show you the exact door I went in. Like it wouldn't be possible the way it works today. But at that time, people, they allowed people to go outside for cigarette breaks into one area. For some reason, it wasn't fenced off or anything. And so they were obviously allowed to re-enter that through that door. And I don't know why the person wasn't there that would be the security guard, but I just saw the door and saw daylight and just ran.
That is a cool story. Now I'm thinking about it, I don't know if you've actually told that story. I think it sounded similar to another one, but that's actually a cool story.
I'm worried that now I'm going to show up for game three and my press pass will be revoked because I've admitted to this crime of 24 years ago, but
no, I think the statute of limitations, all things being equal, I think you should be okay. Can I ask one more Leafs Bruins question, unless you have other stuff you want to add? What do you think of the battles back and forth between Maroon and Ryan Reeves, just the big rig going up against the heavyweight champ?
We have to give some credit here because both of those players are playing well as hockey players in the series. Like I know there's a lot of takes out there, but like Ryan Reeves has legitimately for the last 2 months earned a job to play 7 or 8 minutes a night. Like it's obviously a limited role, but he has not been a liability on the ice. He helped set up the one goal the Leafs scored in game one in the series. He made a mistake on the first goal Boston scored, but they went and got it back. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, and they have the trust of the coach. I mean, right now, when we look at like Nylander coming back in, weirdly, when we're talking about who would come out of the forward lineup, it's not the fourth line, in my opinion, they're not going to touch that. It will probably be someone on the third line. It's probably going to be Nick Robertson just by process of elimination. But what I'm saying is you're inserting a forward back in and you're not touching that line because of how efficient it's been. The big rig, you know, it didn't look good for him. He had a back injury when Boston traded for him. I don't know if you saw some viz of him at practice. Like there were times I saw him skating at practice. It looked like, oh man, like he's not going to be able to play, but he's never known for his speed, but he's made a lot of plays in the series, obviously physically imposing guy. He even plays on the power play unit for the Bruins. So, you know, two players that, you know, Ryan Reeves has 110 playoff games now in his career. Like it's not a coincidence. You know, obviously in the regular season, you know, a lot of what he's doing is fighting and things like that. There's not as much fighting that goes on in the playoffs, but you know, he's playing a role and he's playing it well for the Leafs. And if we had this discussion in November, he was already a healthy scratch in November for the Leafs. Like I would have thought by the time the playoffs came, you can't use him, but that would have been the wrong take. So hopefully I didn't say that on one of our early episodes this season.
No, I'm not going to fact check you on that. But, yeah, man, good job.
What about the Bruins goaltending?
Dude, here's the thing. I loved how Linus Ullmark played in game two. And I still think the whole alternating between goalies is kind of weird for me. But it looked like it was almost going to work until that Austin Matthews goal was scored in game two. It really looked like going back and forth between those two was going to work. But I don't know. Like I've always been the school of that school of thought where if you have a guy, you stick to that guy. But when you have Swayman and Ullmark playing as well as they've been playing all year, I guess I can understand why you go back and forth. But man, imagine if the Bruins were up 2-0 and you all of a sudden have goalies with a win in this series.
Well, then you keep going with it. I think now, exactly. I feel like now it's going to be results based. Like not a hot take to suggest Swayman will start game three. And, you know, but if he loses, maybe you do alternate again. Like, maybe you go back. Like, not even if it's his fault or anything like that, but, you know, they've done it for 28 straight games. Like, right since the end of February, they have alternated every start with their goalies. We've almost never, you know, in modern times, we haven't had a team really do this into the playoffs. It's interesting because it's a different approach. You know, I'll give you another stat, though, that you may or may not know. That goal Austin Matthews scored last night, that was his 12th goal in 11 games against Linus Ullmark in his career. So I don't know if that's something that would ever factor into the Bruins' thinking, but he is the one of the goaltenders. I mean, look, Austin Matthews had a lot of scoring success, a lot of goalies, but that's one of the goalies he's victimized the most during his career. And so maybe that's something to think about, especially if he keeps playing big for the Leafs.
Yeah, Jeremy Swayman, game three. You pencil him in after that. Absolutely. You kind of think of it like the way we look at pitchers in baseball in terms of guys knocking, you know, getting your hits off and all that. Like who's good against this pitcher? Who's good against that guy? Yeah, Jeremy Swayman has to be back. Put him back for game three for the Boston Bruins. Absolutely. I agree with
right,
that.
But game four is the question again. Like it's like if Swayman wins game three, I would imagine he's in game four. Like that's just like,
yeah.
I would think the rotation ends there, but if he loses, maybe they keep alternating. I mean, it's funny because it's a true luxury to have two great goaltenders. Like, don't get me wrong. And both those guys, like Swayman was a stud in game one. Ullmark made some great saves in game two. Like, I don't put that loss in any way, shape, or form on him.
No.
But the thing with having two great goalies is, you know, it does still force a decision, right? Like one of them has to sit. Like you don't get an advantage because they can't both just play the same night. And so it's weird, but you know, give them credit too as individuals because they seem like they really like each other. Like you don't get the sense there's any friction, any tension around that from their end, and that they're really happy for each other's success, which is obviously important when you're sacrificing your own playing time to have someone else in there.
Dude, they have one of the best celebrations in the NHL right now, when they celebrate the wins with the hugs at the end of games. They love each other.
Yeah. Jake DeBrus said that they take a lot of crap for that in the Bruins dressing room.
Who cares? It comes after a win. How much more crap can you get? I don't know about that. That's kind of nuts. Anyway, anything else you want to delve into from this series? We know you've covered it as much as you have so far for The Athletic. Anything else we need to look out for ahead of game three in this series?
No, we'll hit game three on our Thursday show. So
perfect. We should get to Vancouver. Not too long before we started recording earlier today on Tuesday, we've received word, well, Elliot Friedman's first on this, Thatcher Demko, who missed a chunk
of time. Frank Saravalli was first on it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I saw Elliot first.
If we're going to give credit, let's give it where it's due.
Sorry. Frank was on this first. I saw Elliot's tweet first. No shade to any of the other insiders. Thatcher Demko, questionable for the rest of this series between the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators. I'm not sure if a injury has been specified with Thatcher Demko at this point, but that is a massive blow for the Vancouver Canucks in this series if they can't have their number one in net.
I mean, I'll take it one further. That's a nightmare scenario. You know, he's been such a key part of their success this year. You know, he's not long removed from missing more than 5 weeks with a knee injury that went into early April from March. You know, probably don't want to speculate too much that it's the same issue, but given that he hasn't played, he's only played 3 games, I believe, since returning from that injury, including the game one win over Nashville. You know, it's not looking good. And, you know, I suppose this is the beauty of the playoffs is this. There are always unsung players that get thrust into a position or come through with a big goal or a big shot block or do something to help a team win a game. And so Casey DeSmith now has that chance as the Canucks starter. So I'm certainly not writing off their season or saying they're going to lose a series now, but the challenge gets greater without having one of their best players in the lineup and you know, just a key member. And you know, I suppose if there's a good thing here, and it's certainly a tough thing for Thatcher Demko, is he has missed a fair bit of time to injury. So it's not as though it's the first time they've had to deal with this as a team. But, you know, given the emotional way in which they came back and won game one at home, you know, we mentioned how popping the arena was. Like, I think it'll cast a nervous tension over the proceedings now. And, you know, perhaps it will, you know, get the Canucks to focus a little bit more defensively, to do everything they can to help out Casey DeSmith. because they don't have, you know, quite the same safety blanket back there. But, you know, needless to say that the chances of them going on a long playoff run dim a little bit the longer it is that Thatcher Demko is unable to play in goal for them.
Yeah, but this Canucks team, though, that's another opportunity for them to lean more on their forward and defensive talent, right? This is not a team that's just held together by a goaltender. This is a team with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and Brock Besser and, I mean,
JT Miller.
JT Miller. I don't think we're going to put Dakota Joshua in that category, but what a performance by him in game one of that series as well. They have players up front who can go up against this Nashville Predators team, but also that spotlight goes on UC Saros, who he needs himself a win in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, let's face it, the Predators are underdogs in this series, but you know, they'll be thinking much like the Leafs were and heading into game two of their series. Like if you get one win in the second game as a road team, everything looks different. The complexion of the series looks different going home. And so, you know, they're still very much in the series. They had a lead in that game. The Canucks get those two quick goals in the third period that the end up the winner off Joshua's stick. And he adds another one into the empty net. I mean, 3-point night for him. And you know, when you're getting balance scoring as the Canucks did, that's where it gets scary because, you know, Joshua's on the third line with Lindholm and Garland right now. And so if they cash in, because, you know, at a certain point, the Millers, the Pettersons, the Hugheses are going to make themselves known a little bit more with goals of their own and Besser. So, you know, I think the Canucks, they're still set up to win the series, but it's the mountain just got a little steeper while they play without Demko. And, you know, it's a tough – players play injured in the playoffs all the time. It's a tough thing for a goaltender to do, just frankly. I mean, because the risk as a goaltender is if you're not moving well – in your crease, if you're not feeling confident in your positioning, because maybe you're being hampered in terms of your mobility around the net, it's just, you could lose a game because of that. Right. I mean, it's one thing to have a second line right winger battling through something, you know, the stakes are a little less high in terms of that position potentially costing you a game. So, you know, we're already into that stage of the playoffs where it's like, could Nylander go? Should he go? Should he play at 50% or 70%? And I just think with a goaltender, it's much harder to do that. And so, you know, if Demko's not healthy enough to play game two and there's questions about the rest of the series, I mean, questions about the rest of his season because we don't know how many games the Canucks have left.
I don't want to get too ahead here, but could you imagine a scenario where, let's say Vancouver, they find a way to get through a series without Thatcher Demko for however long he can't play? And then the Edmonton Oilers are on the other side of that door in round two. Do you see how they played in game one against the Kings?
Oh, I've thought about that. I've thought about that.
Oof, jeez.
It's I mean, it's been a pretty dream start for anyone cheering for the Canadian teams in this playoffs. You know, there is a world that four teams could make it to the second round, which would be half of the eight teams remaining at that point. So that's not a prediction. This, again, all these series, I mean, Toronto-Boston, like, it already feels like a seven-game series to me. Like, and then you get down to the last game, it's going to be a TD Garden if that's what happens. You know, that's a tough scenario to go in there and win. You know, Colorado, I know the goaltending questions are real, and producer Drew is on the other side of the mics here today. Is probably anxious about the game two coming in that series. But, you know, Winnipeg looked pretty good in finding a way through that game. And you just think, Connor Hellebuyck, the odds of him letting in six again aren't particularly high, and you know, Winnipeg won the game when he did so. So, you know, Edmonton, they're a pretty heavy favorite against LA. They beat them the last 2 years. I don't see any reason that won't happen again. So it's lining up pretty nice. Where maybe if you like spending time in Canada during the playoffs, you might actually have some various options to do so.
Not to hop back and forth between these series, but like scoring six on Connor Hellebuyck, who will probably win the Vezina this year. Cale Makar gets a 3-point night. Nathan McKinnon's one of the goal scorers, and you lose. How many times has that happened in the McKinnon era?
Probably never. I haven't never looked it up, but like I'm gonna get. You just don't see many teams lose 7-6.
No,
like 6-5. 6-5 has been a famous hockey score. Like we've seen a lot of crazy games end 6-5. So there's times you score five and lose occasionally in hockey, but six. I mean, you got to go back to the 80s when there was like 8-6 and 10-6 games and like goofy scores. But we don't get too many of those these days. So, you know, needless to say, I expect a much tighter, you know, the Jets, you know, pride themselves on defensive play. You know, obviously Colorado has a lineup that can open things up offensively and pick teams apart, and especially if you give them power plays and things of that nature. But, you know, it's probably going to be a 3-2 second game now. It's just, you had to get that weird one out of your blood. I was actually out. It was an off night in Boston watching that with a group of the other reporters. And we were entertained. I'll put it that way, as the pucks kept going in Winnipeg.
Oh man. Also, I got to revisit Boston too. Just going to the TD Garden. Well, I mean, a regular season game will never compare to a playoff game, but what a great arena. And just watching that game and just taking in the atmosphere from my couch, dude, I got to go back.
You do. And I've been lucky. I've been there a lot because I've covered the Eastern Conference teams in the playoffs in my various jobs the last, 15 years. And they've been a team that's played a lot of playoff games. So connect the two. I've been there a lot. What I like most about it is the game presentation is not overdone in any way. Like, it's not full of like crazy produced videos. Like, they just like basically crank up the rock music. They replay the big hits on the board and the crowd just goes bananas. Like it's almost like simple. And I mean that as a compliment for creating an atmosphere for a game. And so I think sometimes like some game presentations, it's like too much of the video, too slick. I think you have to remember, really, people want to have a good time. They want to, there's a real feeling in that building.
This episode of the Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shady Rays. Get ready for the season ahead with quality shades built to last. Our friends at Shady Rays have you covered with premium polarized shades that won't break the bank. I just want to say, by the way, this is not in the script at all. Still love these. These are incredible. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company offering a world-class product rated 5 stars by over 300,000 people. Their shades have durable frames and crystal clear optics, making them the perfect choice for all outdoor adventures. Plus, if your shades ever go missing or they take an unexpected hit, do not sweat it. They have the most insane protection in all of eyewear. Every pair is backed by lost or broken replacements. And if you don't love your shades, you can exchange them for a new pair or return them worry-free within 30 days. There's no risk when you shop. Their team always has your back with personal and fast support. Go to ShadyRays.com right now and use code Johnston for 50% off 2 or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. Johnston, that's the code. 2 or more pairs of polarized sunglasses, 50% off. All you have to do is use that code Johnston when you hit up ShadyRays.com. This episode of the Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Shopify. Name some dynamic teammates who have gotten it done together. Gronk and Brady, they come to mind. Pippen and Jordan, Venus and Serena. What about the perfect teammates when it comes to growing your business? That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow, and they help you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. So many great tools, so many great resources available to you. All you have to do is use Shopify. And if you want to use it, sign up now for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Johnston, all lowercase. Shopify.com/Johnston. Siege, we should probably talk about the Edmonton LA series. I know I kind of touched off on it with how much of a crazy game one was, but it's Zach Hyman getting himself a hat trick. Connor McDavid, 5 points as well. The Oilers look really, really good. I know it's one game, but they look really good.
Wow, what an emphatic start, right? And, for a team, by the sport logic numbers or the underlying numbers that the teams get, someone who works said, like, they've never seen the kind of numbers the Oilers have just in terms of how far they outpace in some of the offensive categories the other even top teams in the league. Shows through on the scoreboard on a night like that. And don't know where all the Hyman haters are at, but after a pretty impressive regular season to start with a hat trick, and if you look back, like, he has been a consistent producer in Edmonton in the playoffs. He's scored a lot of goals for that team since signing his big free agent contract there. McDavid doing his thing. This is likely going to be, I think, an easy first round for them with respect to the Kings. We'll see where things end up, but it seems like there's a path there for Edmonton to finally get it done. And this is a huge year, obviously, just given some of the uncertainty with Leon Draisaitl able to sign an extension as of July 1st and, you know, what becomes of the core of this team. I mean, that there's no illusion that there's like 10 more cracks at it. I'm not saying there won't be, but there's no one can pretend that. And so I think the stakes are high and it says something about where they're at as a team that they, you know, basically have that thorough of a victory to start things off in the playoffs.
Have we touched? So we didn't really touch on Vegas, Dallas. Did you watch a little bit? I mean, you were probably writing as that was going on, but that first period was insane. 5 goals between those two teams and Vegas coming out on top in game one. Dallas is my cup pick this spring. And I mean, I still feel good about it, but man, Vegas, those guys waking up, Mark Stone scoring. So of course everyone loved that, considered the LTIR stuff.
And I noticed Thomas Hurdle also scored. So
he did score as well. Yeah, it's going to be another spring where people are going to bitch about LTIR and being insert amount of money here over the cap. I can't wait to see more of that discourse online. Yay!
Get I mean, yourselves. I will say, I do think that GMs want the rule changed. Like, I think that there is support. Obviously, we talked about this a little bit at the GMs meeting a month or so ago. I think you're going to, it has to be collectively bargained. So I don't know what timeline you're looking at. It might not be until 2026 when the next CBA gets done. But I'll just say we don't have to dive into it. I don't think that this is going to be allowed forevermore. I really do think that there's concern about competitive balance. I know that there's not an easy mechanism necessarily to address the issues or the potential issues that are there. You know, right now Vegas is playing by the rules. There's just no way around it. But and Tampa played by the rules, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point those rules change. I think that's the best way to put it. Cause there's a lot of people like, yes, this is an online social media thing. Fans are getting in on it, but there's people in the sport that don't like the optics of it either.
Well, that's interesting to hear. And if it got to a point where that was dealt with for the next CBA, then fine. But you pointed it out yourself. It's the Vegas is not breaking any rules by doing this.
No, and
something every team can do.
And not every team does, and not everyone manages their cap this way, and not everyone has a captain that misses the last month of the season and is ready to go on the first day of the playoffs every year either. So
yeah, that's you know, true.
Like kind of weird. But there's great there is great injuries. Like I have to say, like even at the top of the show we were talking about William Nylander, and I was like, why didn't they just come out and say he's gonna miss 2 games? Well, because maybe they didn't know that. Because, you know, especially when you get to games this important, you know, players do play through stuff or maybe, you know, the timelines get accelerated. So I don't know that it's all puppet strings and conspiracy theories, but I think that I could see more mechanisms being put in place to ensure that couldn't happen. And it's not just Vegas. I mean, there's a whole bunch of teams in LTIR entering the playoffs. So, you know, they're far from the only one and they're just, they take on a little bit of the evil empire kind of vibe, right? It's just been good ever since they entered the league. They make every big trade and every big free agent signing and they do everything they can to win. That's exactly what, if you are a fan of a team, you want your organization being run like that, I think. But if you're not a fan
shouldn't
of the team.
Shouldn't fans be mad at their own teams and not Vegas?
For being more cautious or not mimicking some of the behavior?
Something like that. Like, I mean, I don't know. That's how I see it. Like, I get it. I can understand that, like, you're annoyed at how Vegas is going about it. Like, they enter the league. They're not even a decade old, and they have a Stanley Cup ring. There are teams who haven't even made the playoffs. And, yep, they've been in the Cup final twice. They've won, and they've lost in the final. There are teams who have not been in the playoffs. Well, at least one I can think of right now who has not been in the playoffs as long as
Detroit and Buffalo, both.
Yep. They have not been in the playoffs as long as Vegas has been a team. Yeah, I sure, fine. There's reasons to be upset, but also
I think Ottawa too. I think Ottawa too, but I'm not.
If it was your team that you rooted for, would you be feeling the same way? I don't know.
No, you'd be pumped that you went out and traded for Thomas Hurdle like 2 minutes before the deadline when there wasn't even one rumor about it. Like that would,
dude.
After trading for Noah Hanifin, after trading for Anthony Mantha,
we'd all be there. We'd all be there. And I'm not trying to come across as some Vegas glazer.
I mean, they traded for Mark Stone at a deadline, too, originally. Like,
dude, like, Vegas just finds a way to do it. I can't hate on that. That's what every fan of their teams want from their GM. I can't hate on that scenario. So when I see people lose their minds about Vegas, I'm like, okay, but you wouldn't do this if your team was doing it.
It's a tough draw, though, for Dallas in round one, I'll say.
Yeah, tell that to Dallas.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a tough draw to, like, get that team with those players coming back in the lineup. I mean, that's, you know, Vegas, I won't say barely squeaked in, but they kind of had to squeak into the playoffs. Like, they had they did. It was never really that close at the end. It was always mathematically there, but, like, I never felt like they were going to miss, but, you know. And a team like that knows they just have to get in and anything's possible.
Yeah. Any quick thoughts on Florida-Tampa? We didn't really talk about the Rangers-Caps and what a wild win by Carolina on Monday night over the Islanders, coming back in the third as well. We don't have to go through those extensively.
No hot takes. You know, I'm interested to see game two, Florida-Tampa. I would expect maybe a little better game. Tampa didn't get to its game early enough in game one there. It's funny. You got to see these things out. And I don't know if you noticed this trend so far, but almost all the games have been won by the home team so far.
Yes.
The Leafs got to win in Boston, and obviously Vegas got to win in Dallas. But other than that, the home teams have been having a lot of success. So maybe that's a trend to watch, because it seems like home ice advantage has mattered less and less in recent years. But maybe we're seeing a snapback there. I don't know. But something I'll keep my eye on.
Absolutely. As we look around the league, the Buffalo Sabres, funny enough, we mentioned them. Lindy Ruff is back as head coach of the Buffalo Sabres. Thoughts on him being rehired by the Sabres?
It gave me Cito Gaston vibes, like when the Jays brought back Cito.
Yeah.
When basically, because, you know, for anyone, I'm sorry, this is a hockey podcast, you might not be a baseball fan, but Cito was the manager when the Jays won the World Series in 92 and 93. When they had their most success, was, I think fair to say, a beloved character among the fan base. And then they had a nuclear winter of Blue Jays teams in which they just were not good forever. It felt like every time they tried to do something, it didn't work. And so by bringing Cito back, it was almost just like half PR move, half trying to summon the good vibes of the old days. Like, that's kind of what it feels like. Now, that's not entirely fair to Lindy Ruff, because when you look at it, you know, New Jersey had a pretty fine season last year and he was their head coach, and it wasn't one that a lot of people expected. And so I still think there's a case to say Lindy Ruff is a good coach, but, you know, just sort of feels like this was in the air from the minute they fired Don Granato. I mean, look how quickly this hiring is made. I don't even know how many other candidates could seriously have been, you know, interviewed or considered in the process. And, you know, Buffalo just feels a little bit like they're searching for an answer, and they've obviously cycled through a ton of head coaches since they last played a playoff game. And, you know, this feels like it really does to me kind of like give off the sense of they're trying to recreate some magic, or, you know, I think that they have a PR or they have a potential fan issue there. Right. I mean, great, great hockey city, passionate hockey fans, but I think people are tuning out because, you know, it's been the same old story. And, you know, at least last season they played into the final week of the year where, you know, the games had consequences where in theory they could have made the playoffs. They fell just short. You know, this year was another year that they were basically eliminated with a month to go. And so, you know, I think that this is obviously, it's done. You know, Kevin Adams went out of his way to say, like, this is not just nostalgia, this is about winning now. But I still feel like there's an element of goodwill that they're trying to rebuild with a fan base that's been kicked in the crotch for about 15 straight years.
Can you think of a time where rehiring a coach has worked recently in the NHL? You could think of guys who've been rehired. Michel Therrien and Claude Julien have both had two stints coaching the Montreal Canadiens. Daryl Sutter has had two stints coaching the Calgary Flames. I'm trying to think of some other names.
Paul Maurice in Carolina went back.
Paul Maurice, yes, he did. Who else, actually? But none of those guys ended up winning the second time around.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, the circumstances that they left have changed, right? And, you know, Lindy Ruff was a coach for a long time in Buffalo. That team kind of grew up together. It was a lot of homegrown players that ultimately on the other side of the lockout, you know, popped with success, right? They had Danny Briere and obviously Ryan Miller and Ned and Chris Drury and you know, Brian Campbell. Like they had a lot of players that kind of came up through their organization. And, you know, now it's just a different set of circumstances. Not to say it can't work. I just, I understand at a time to me when there's maybe more, you know, like you got Craig Berube just sitting there, for example. Like I just wonder if you know, they're blinded by this idea of the past a little bit. Like, look at part of sports is, you know my saying, Julian, you're selling winning or you're selling hope.
Selling hope.
They haven't been selling winning Buffalo for so long. It's hard to sell hope because people are like, yeah, we've heard this story. Like, they've had all those first overall picks over the years. Right. And even the second overall pick got Sam Reinhart. Well, guess what? Sam Reinhart's best season is like a few years removed from Buffalo this year. And he's over 50 goals and scores in Florida's opener of the playoffs. Like, you know, I just think that they're trying to do two things at the same time. They're trying to give you hope and hope that it leads to winning. And there's no guarantee that you'll accomplish both of this hire. I'll say that much.
You ever remember the fact that the Sabres had Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart together?
And oh, yeah, man. With them?
Golly.
And they drafted, you know, Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, number one. Like, they've had a lot of high draft picks. This is the danger of the full rebuild, like the total tear it to the studs rebuild. I hate to be a broken record, but it's just, it's not the way to go. Like, if your team is, if you're thinking that as a fan, like, and I get you're frustrated, like, this is the counter argument, is that you can still get all those picks and there's just not enough infrastructure in your organization for them to scale up together.
Sorry. I just randomly thought of, and I'm sure there are people listening to this podcast who know exactly what I'm talking about, but when Eichel and Reinhart were teammates and they got to Buffalo, they got to the rink on a tandem bike together. There's like this dumb little video of them driving through some garage on a tandem bike. The Buffalo
Sabres. I've never seen that.
You've never seen that? Also,
would you ride a tandem bike with me?
Yes.
Okay, because I've never ridden one, but I would like that.
I've never done that, but I absolutely would. I feel like of anyone at the SDPN, I would feel the most safe and secure riding a tandem bike with you.
I love that. We should get you to Toronto this summer, and we'll do it. We'll get lots of video. We can use it for like the opening of next year's show.
I don't know if you want to give producer Drew too many ideas.
Julian and CJ just like cruising around on a tandem bike.
Something for season four next year?
Season four, brother.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, that's all the endorsement I need. Anyway. Are you ready for Ask CJ? You ready for the time of the week where we get you to answer a bunch of questions?
Yes.
Let's do it. From Undrafted Hockey Fan, where's the video of Chris and Julian's playoff brackets and winners?
I didn't do one.
I don't know if you were supposed to do one, but like, do you remember your bracket offhand? Did you make a bracket?
I didn't make a bracket.
Okay, but you picked the Oilers.
Yeah, I picked the Oilers in the preseason, and I just stuck with them because I feel like, you know, I have no reason to doubt my original pick, and I don't want to revise history. And I'd rather have been on the record all year as picking the Oilers to win the cup. But Steve put it in the group chat. You probably saw it just before the playoffs. He's like, "Here's where you can join." And I started to do it. I'm like, "Oh, I'm already exhausted. My brain hurts." And so, like, I like started to do a bracket, but I never completed one.
The tedious thing wasn't making the bracket. It was assigning it to the, not even just the games. It was assigning it to whichever person was having their bracket challenge. Because I'm sure you've had other people try to approach you and be like, "Hey, join my bracket challenge thing." Like, that I thought was the hard part. Like, I had a few people being like, "Hey, like, join my bracket challenge thing," and trying to assign a bracket. I was like, what are you trying to do with that? But I realized from then, that's how you enter these person's specific bracket challenge things. Make it easy. Anyway.
But yeah, I didn't do one. Did you do one?
I did one. I have Dallas over the New York Rangers. I don't remember how many games, but my pick is Dallas, New York for the Stanley Cup final this year. I have a Dallas Edmonton conference final, and I have a Boston New York Rangers conference final. That is what I have. I'm sure there are people who are going to look at that and be like, "Yeah, no chance, buddy." But hey, it's my bracket. I do what I want.
If I did a bracket, I would have ended up with Edmonton, Toronto, just because I'm rooting for chaos.
Do you realize that Edmonton, Toronto would be like, I don't know. I'd have to take shelter somewhere. I don't know how that would go. It would be chaos. It would be pandemonium across this country.
I kind of want to see just what Steve Dangle looks like after six more weeks of a playoff run, and like his beard, and like he's just gonna be ragged.
Like, he already looks born.
Yeah, he already looks exhausted in those videos. Like I can only imagine the mental and emotional distress he will be in if the Leafs ever actually like win a couple rounds and get into a conference final or a cup final.
Could you imagine him after all that and the Leafs lose? If they win, it's going to be insane. But if they lose, we might see a whole other level of emotion we've never seen.
I wonder if they win, if he's actually going to be calm, just because you're just like, wow. Like, no one ever really expects their team to win in sports. Like, I can say that, like, as a Cowboys fan, like, even they have a great regular season, like, no part of me is like, they're actually going to win the Super Bowl. It's more like, how are they going to break my heart and when? But not like, I don't know. It's hard to believe your team's ever going to win.
It can happen, though. Like, I just think specifically with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have been the equivalent of Charlie Brown trying to kick the football every time Lucy holds it and then pulls it away. We literally have an old episode of our show titled Charlie Brown. But, like, I think because of all the pain and all the jokes that Leafs fans have suffered through. Actually, I don't even like using the word suffered. Some of that's deserved. But, like, I think Steve Dangle would cry. Like, I think the STP would just start. Like, I think Adam would do his best to be composed. Jesse's just going to be happy. I can see Steve Dangle just crying. I could see him just letting all the emotions flow out, seeing that his team finally did it. And it would be craziness. It would be pandemonium.
We're way ahead of ourselves, though. They've only got one puck in that board thing they got. So, I mean, they need 15 more pucks before this is a real thing. But
yeah, let's put a pin on that dream scenario for a ton of people at this network and who watch this show. Let's get to another question. Daniel Burt. What's the best snack for playoff watching at home?
Ooh.
I'm very curious what you're going to say here.
I don't know what counts as a snack. I was like, I could go for some pizza while I'm watching a playoff
game.
That's
not really a snack.
Okay.
Like, a snack is
I'm going to say Doritos.
Ooh. Wait. What's your favorite type of Doritos?
So, I like Doritos in all their forms, pretty much.
I love Doritos too, but this is very important for me.
But I recently had a weird mashup. Like, I think it's like a limited time only. Do you know what I'm talking about? And it was a mashup of Cool Ranch and like some kind of pickle Dorito. And it was like shockingly good.
I also
like just like the cheddar, like the normal, you know, whatever, nacho cheese or whatever you call it.
Yeah. Like for me, it's the normal one at the top. Then the barbecue bold one.
Oh, I never
I'm okay
that.
With sweet chili heat. I'm not crazy about Cool Ranch. People love Cool Ranch Doritos.
Oh, I like Cool Ranch.
I think they're overrated.
I think you're overrated.
I think you're overrated. Don't get me started on that. I love that. Like 5-10 minutes ago, it's like, yeah, man, I would love to ride a tandem bike with you. Now it's like, no, buddy, you're overrated.
Well, you know, you're coming for Cool Ranch. Like I can't take that lying down.
You would rather defend Cool Ranch than me?
No, that's true. That was low blow. It's that okay. Was like CJ 3 hours of sleep, like child brain. Like,
it's okay.
Producer Drew has put a vote in the chat for jalapeno cheddar Doritos. I've never tried those, but I would consider them. Either. That sounds good. I just haven't had them.
It could be a good idea. You know what? I don't know. Maybe I should give Cool Ranch another chance. It's just that you can't, like, literally the regular flavor of Doritos, you cannot go wrong. It's perfect.
It is pretty damn good.
It's the best chip out there.
That's what I'm voting for my playoff snack.
From JDD, question for CJ. Being the Swifty of record for SDPN, have you had a chance to listen to the Tortured Poets Department yet? If yes, what are your thoughts, standout tracks from the album?
I haven't listened at all.
Oh, wow.
But I've seen online some discourse. Like, it seems like people don't love this one as much. Is that fair to say high level, or?
I've seen like a few places like Pitchfork, like rate it pretty mid. There's like a few lyrics that people are talking about as well. Something about, and don't come for me, Swifties. I'm just going off what I remember here. Some lyric about how she would imagine herself, like if she could go back in time, she could go back to the 1830s where there were no racists. Like what is, like, really? Huh.
But I will give it a listen. I just I haven't had a chance yet because of the playoffs, and I didn't want to. It sounds weird, but like when I go for like the time I would have done it was when I went on my runs in Boston.
Yeah.
But I don't like listening to like music I haven't heard before on a run because I feel like it might distract me or something. Like I just like listening to stuff I know that I like, if that makes sense.
Do you have a playlist?
No, I often listen to podcasts, although it's weird. Every run in Boston, I don't know why, I just was in a music mood. So I was like listening to like Noah Kahan or, you know, whatever, just something that I had like three great runs in Boston. What a city, man. Like they have those trails along the Charles River, and it's like all, you know, it's great vibe, like university campuses all around there. Like, I think it was Sunday morning I was out, and there's like some rowing competition between the universities, like on the river, and like all these students, like, I don't know, just like, I think I was like running faster because everyone around me was like young and fit. So like, I felt like I had to like push it a little harder or something.
You're youngish and fit.
Not like, you know, some of the 20-year-olds you see out there for a jog are like 130 pounds. And I'm talking like men, like, it's like,
damn,
I can't compete with that.
Like 0.0% body fat. Jeez.
Yeah. Did you see Zdeno Chara, by the way, ran the Boston Marathon and then the London Marathon 6 days later?
That's insane.
It actually is nuts. I'm telling you, it's crazy. I mean, good for him. I'm not second guessing him, but like, he has run so many marathons in such a short period of time. Like, that's like just completing a marathon, even when you've run and when you've trained, like that's hard, or that's like an accomplishment. And then he's like, oh, I'll just fly across the pond and run another one 6 days later. Anyway.
Okay. I got time, I think, for one more question, and I want your pick. Mm-hmm. Would you rather answer a question about Utah/Arizona? Would you rather answer a question about top five NHL mascots or a roster swap question?
No to mascots. You choose between the other two. I just don't. I don't have any hot. I mean, SJ Sharkey's my guy.
Yes, he is.
But I don't have a lot of hot takes other than that.
I would have just said UP for that question as number one. I'm going to say I'll pick the.
You can just do both. I'll be quick.
That's fair. I'll give you these two then. So from Cosmonaut LXV, if you had full control of the Utah franchise, what would be your first order of business, and what would you name the team?
Let's go with the Yetis.
Okay.
You don't like that. I can
Yeti's
hear your voice.
Okay. Yeti's okay.
What's your favorite one? I haven't paid any attention to this. Like, I know there's conversation on this, but I've been like tied up. Like, I have not thought about it for 1 second.
I'm going to the ECHL franchise and I'm buying the name Grizzlies. I'm buying Grizzlies. I think that's the best possible name.
Yeah. I mean, I did see that Ryan Smith said he wants to incorporate something like what the Jazz have. Like, he wants mountains and stuff like Grizzlies. Like, I feel like there's some synergy there. That would be good.
I don't know if it's going to be yours. I would take all of the records pertaining to Winnipeg and give them to the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, they don't have them. Alex Morello actually owns those records.
Oh, right. He does. That's so freaking true. So, he does.
So it's kind of nice, though, that they're starting fresh in that sense. Like, you know, whoever has the most points next season will be like the all-time point leader for the franchise or whatever. My first order of business is giving Dylan Gunther a long-term extension.
Yes.
And I think they just need to be patient, honestly. Like, obviously they're going to sign a couple free agents, but I don't see them making a pitch. Like, if Steven Stamkos hits the market, like the whatever the bigger names are, like, I don't see them doing that. I think they just got to keep being patient, and they have something real there, man. Like, they got really good team.
Yeah.
So I don't think they need to take a big swing at this stage of where they're at.
Okay. I like the order of business you got there. From Stevie P, last one. Which team says no for a whole roster swap between Toronto and Vancouver? You're thinking
Vancouver.
Vancouver says no. Okay. All right.
I'm thinking more because Toronto does not have Mitch Marner signed beyond next season. Does not have John Tavares signed beyond next season. I feel like Vancouver's got its core locked up a little bit more, but I didn't. I'm sure the question, the spirit of the question is like, which roster is better?
Yeah. But I do like that thinking, though. You're thinking of the future, which is what we all
I'm just
be
thinking, well, there's just a little more certainty in Vancouver with what the core looks like, and I like the core. Yeah. I stick with Vancouver.
All right.
There's like all kinds of ways you could unpack that. I think Austin Matthews is the best individual player of the two rosters. So then, in theory, if you're Vancouver, maybe you would be just happy to get the best individual player.
Right, but Vancouver might have the best collective core between both of those two teams, right? You get a number one defenseman, you get a who's going to likely win a Norris this year, and Elias Pettersson, yeah, and Messer and Miller and all those guys.
And even, I mean, it's unfortunate timing, but even Demko, like having...
Yeah.
Although he's, you know, he doesn't have much time left in his contract either. Anyway.
No. Anyway, that's
good. Thanks for thinking of random questions. Like, I would never... Like, I've never contemplated that until 6 seconds ago when you asked the question, so...
And for everybody who sends in those random questions, thank you for doing so for Ask CJ. We'll be back on Thursday with a brand new episode. We'll get stick taps in as well and more coverage of the Stanley Cup playoffs. For CJ, I'm Julian. So long. Enjoy the rest of your week. In peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie @JKMcKenzie.